Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. I'm in San Francisco right now. It's 5:30 p.m., and soon I'll begin my daily commute home, starting here in the KALW studios and ending back in Oakland. I'm curious, where are you right now? Are you in a car making a similar trip home? If you're stuck in traffic right now, do you, like me, find yourself looking into drivers' windows, wondering what their day was like? Maybe you're on a bus or a BART train. Do you instinctually try to sit in one particular seat every time? Maybe you're looking around the bus right now and you notice that the woman sitting in the seat directly opposite of yours is missing one of her acrylic fingernails. Are you considering how she lost it? Maybe gardening? Soccer practice? Perhaps it flew off during a fevered rendition of Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C sharp minor, landing on the keys of her baby grand piano at home. There are an infinite number of possible stories that follow us back and forth from home every day. Ones we create in our heads, and ones that unfold in front of our eyes. If you think about it, commuting can be fascinating. The Hackney Podcast knows that. It's a show that brings London's Hackney neighborhood to life through sound-rich scenes and thoughtful interviews, including ones that take place on public transportation. In an episode all about buses, dozens of writers give a peek into the intimate worlds of their daily commutes.
I normally sit near the doors so I can get off as quickly as possible. I don't know what that says about me.
At the back, because of the speed bumps.
Obviously, if there's a good-looking guy on the bus, I'll go and sit next to him.
There is an etiquette to who you sit next to, which seat you leave free, all that sort of thing.
You think about things.
I think about myself, actually, because I have a lot of problems.
Just looking around, see what's going on.
I just saw a guy trying to smoke a cigarette, but he had to try and light it like five times before I could do it.
I'm late every morning for school.
I'm reading a fitness magazine today. It's not my usual read, but the first thing that I could grab on my way out.
I get to send these bloody charity things through, so I don't respond to them, so what I do is I read them and then I leave them on the buses, like these Victorian ladies who leave biblical tracts on things, you know. I do the same with charity things. Well, I feel it's a bit better than just chucking them in the bin.
Sometimes I sleep.
How do you think muffin's good?
I'm listening to my brother's mate's band called Sound Science.
Muffin's good.
Sometimes we sing under
normally
the bus.
Normally I would just like to listen to muffin.
Music changes your whole world, that you can be sat on a bus and depending on what kind of music you've got on, it can make you quite enjoy your experience. Never see me rocking down shoes, I rock flows cause there's business to get down to.
25,600 minutes, 525,000 Germans so dear. 525,600 minutes, how do you measure a year?
I like sitting on the top at the front.
Oh my god, I'm going to be late again because I'm late every morning for school.
Late every morning because our bus will have to be in like at 8:15 at the latest for warm up. So buses are pretty vital in our training.
I generally get like two seats so I can put my feet up.
I like sitting up nice view. Yeah.
Bus tops are installations of displays that will rest on the roofs of bus shelters across all the London. You'll be able to see them from the top of a bus, sitting on the left-hand side, and you'll be pleasantly surprised, we hope, when you look down and suddenly see a piece of art that was created, well, perhaps by you or the person sitting next to you. So you can think of it as though we're turning London into an exhibition space, where the buses are the exhibition guide, and by taking different buses you'll be able to see different works throughout all of London.
I'm meant to be going out tonight, so I'm thinking, shall I go, shall I not?
Upstairs, there are unpleasant people, but they're all sitting down and no one's actually looking at you.
Quite interesting to watch other people.
There's people at the front wearing hats.
Prams in the middle.
He's having a little kip. Oh yeah, he's waking up now.
It's basically London squished into a little metal box.
Those were the voices of bus riders traveling up and down London's Hackney neighborhood. Just an excerpt from the Hackney podcast. You can listen to the full episode on their website, hackneypodcast.co.uk. There, you can also subscribe to the show and check out photos and blog posts covering the entirety of the Hackney neighborhood. We all have our own intimate observations during commute time, right? Well, my favorite happens usually once a week on Thursdays between 5 and 7 p.m. I remember the first time it happened. I was driving north on the 101, and on the pedestrian bridge above the Vermont Street exit, I saw a man dancing in the center of the walkway, holding up a large, very visible and cartoonish red heart. He was smiling, shifting his dance moves back and forth, seemingly trying to make eye contact with everyone below. I'm not easily enchanted, but I was taken aback by this man, this dancing, happy man waving a heart around. That was months ago, and every Thursday since, I usually see him. Maybe you're looking at him right now. I wonder why he does it every single week. David Weinberg, creator and host of the podcast Random Tape, has his own version of the Dancing Heart Man on his commute in LA. And unlike me, he's had the chance to ask him why.
Pow! Yeah! Thank you, baby, thank you. Come on, give it up. Yeah! Come on, drinking it.
So a few weeks ago, I was riding my bike home on a Friday, and I got to the intersection of Sunset and Hollywood, and there was this guy standing on the corner. He was wearing a tie and jeans, and he had black gloves on, and he was holding up this big sign. On one side, the sign had a big peace symbol. It said, "Celebrate peace." And on the other side, it said, "Spread love."
Oh, oh, oh! Yeah! I got you! Oh, yeah! Come on, bring it on! Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah! Bring it on!
So the next week, I ride by the same intersection about the same time, and he's there again, holding up this sign and shouting at cars.
Yeah, 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 all right, come on. Thank you, thank you.
Then the next Friday, same thing, ride my bike, there he is. So I stop and I strike up a conversation with him.
Did you just introduce yourself and just say hi and explain what you do?
Hi, my name's Steve Sharp. I stand on the corner from 5 to 7 on Friday nights, trying to get people to celebrate peace.
And how do you do it? Explain.
How do I do it?
Yeah.
I got a sign, and I wave, and I jump, and I sing, and I, hey, cajole, try to get people to sing. Come on, baby, come on.
Turns out this guy, Steve, he's been standing on this corner every Friday from 5 to 7 for the last 10 years.
Prius, you and me. I don't get flipped off very much. Come on, baby, come on.
It must be good. There's so many people that see you, and they just light up with a smile.
Well, you know, it's gratifying. Yeah. It's gratifying to stand out here and see that there are, I don't know what they're seeing in me.
All right, Sion. Hello, young lovers, wherever you are. Come on now, sing it out. Sing it with me. Hey.
Better than nothing.
Come on, come on.
Hello, young lovers, whoever you are.
That interview comes from the podcast Random Tape, produced by David Weinberg. The show features all kinds of stories that stem from found tapes and random interviews. You can check them out at randomtape.org. Also, I'm truly curious to know why the Dancing Heart Man of the 101 does what he does. If you can help me get in touch with him, please send me an email to thespot@kalw.org. Be faithful, be true. Now for a story of a different kind of commute, one that spans the entirety of California geographically as well as historically, and all by railway. Muriel Murch has been producing radio in the Bay Area for over 20 years. Her podcast, Letter from Abroad, covers topics ranging from literature, agriculture, medicine, all in essay format. In this episode, she takes us on a train ride from Emeryville to Van Nuys and looks at the California commute routes of today and yesterday.
September 2009. A California commute. Sometimes I think California is lying on its back, as if balancing a circus act. To the north, its arms hold up Oregon and Washington, while to the south its toes tickle the shifting sands of the Mexican border. The broad belly of the state lies exposed, stretched between the Pacific Ocean coast and the western Sierra Nevada mountains. The sliding plates under the earth that shift the sands, rocks, and even the surrounding sea make California seem like a movable feast of promised delicacies that may or may not be within reach. First, the promise of gold nugget, then of black oil, drew early American prospectors in their thousands. They brought immigrant labor and uncurbed enterprise with them. Today, most commuting is done by air. People fly within the state, and during the past 40 years, the price of airfare to and from San Francisco and Los Angeles has risen from PSA's hop on board $16.95 to a possible $600 if you're not paying attention. Countrywide and international travel bring jumbo and joystick planes to land at LAX and Burbank airports almost 24/7. For young people saving their money, people with families, or just those who like to take to the road, there are the highways of Route 1, Route 101, or the Interstate Highway 5. For those willing to take time and not be exhausted on arrival, there is another route. One that can take 12 hours or longer, but lets the traveler see more of the secrets California has to offer. The coastal Starlight train begins in Washington and goes down to San Diego, a full 24 hours each way. The train travels like a giant caterpillar, sometimes inching, sometimes racing through the landscape, as if imagining a plane above, hovering like a bird of prey. The train leaves Emeryville Station either early in the morning or late at night, slowly, as if balancing, finding the groove for its wheels on the tracks. Pigeons sit up and watch the train go by. Small shacks that have not yet been moved on by a bulldozer line streets that were paved for more gold than these homes will provide. Occasionally, hope can be seen in small overgrown gardens of corn and tomatoes. They stand beside peg-worn work clothes hanging on the line. Tarpaulins cover pickup truck beds filled with dragged home dreams of one day I'll fix this and make something of it. The shacks give way to the ground cover of storage units, RVs, and motorboats sport for sale signs more frequently than fresh paint and sit like discarded toys waiting for their next owner. The train picks up a little speed. San Jose and suburbia lie behind heavy concrete walls that are covered with huge, wild, colorful graffiti, screaming, "Let me out!" Or is it, "Let me in!" The walls fall away, opening up to the first farm acres, where bent men and women work through the lush green fields of crops to fill the waiting pickup trucks with their harvest. On it goes, down now into the Central Valley for hours before returning to the Pacific coast once more. The sun has risen, arched over us, and is now beginning its descent into the late afternoon. We look down at the ocean, watching the fishermen and the surfers, finding comfort in them as they look up, also reassured with the train passing by. A guidebook tells me that the Central Valley of California occupies about 42,000 square miles, about the same size as Tennessee, and though physically it is less than 1% of America's farmland, it produces 8% of the country's agriculture. The valley carries the rivers down from the hills to the ocean beyond, and every major river has a dam with which the water is directed and rationed, bought and sold at the bidding of history's untold stories. By 1890, an agricultural community existed in the area first known as Hollywood. By 1900, the community, now called Kawenga, had a post office, newspaper, hotel, and two markets, and a population of 500. Los Angeles had grown to 100,000 people and lay 10 miles east through the orange, lemon, and grapefruit groves that flourished within the Los Angeles basin. Hollywood was incorporated as a municipality in 1903. In 1904, a new trolley car track running from Los Angeles to Hollywood was opened and became known as the Hollywood Boulevard. It cut travel time to and from Los Angeles drastically. H.J. Whitley was a new breed of prospector and the president and major shareholder of the Los Pacific Boulevard and Development Company. As he sold residential lots among the lemon ranches that then lined the foothills, real estate began its relentless push onto agriculture. It did not take long for the old citrus fruit packing houses to be converted into livery stables, providing better transportation for the inhabitants of Hollywood. From the 1920s to the 1940s, a large percentage of transportation to and from Hollywood was by means of the red cars of the Pacific Electric Railway. College towns call. Santa Barbara is a big stop. And the young people get on and off, heading to Los Angeles, San Diego, and stations in between. Outside of Van Nuys is the small town of Chatsworth. Early in the 20th century, it became the location site of most of the first, now old, classic Western films. The town lingers quietly now, looking up at the rugged mountains that gave it its early fame and fortune. And the surrounding mountains seem to ask of the town, "Are you really this rugged? Can you live out here in this water-pumped desert?" One of the train conductors announces that this is his hometown. This is where he came from. Young people come from Chatsworth, but nobody goes there anymore. We merely pass by in the train along the Pacific Coast Railway, on our way to somewhere else. This has been A Letter from Abroad, written and produced by Muriel Murch. Music composed and performed by Pete Horner.
You can find the Letter from Abroad podcast up now on iTunes. We'll also have a link on our website, kalw.org. You're listening to The Spot, the show that features the best stories from podcasts and independent radio producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Rather than just observe and wonder about his fellow commuters, local radio producer Sam Harnett interviews them. His podcast, Driving with Strangers, features candid and surprising stories told by passengers he meets through ride sharing right here in the Bay Area.
So we're in the middle of a giant ocean in a tiny fishing boat.
And he's got blood all over his leg. I can see the gunshot wound.
They took my passport and left with it, so I was like in a room by myself.
I thought I was gonna be stuck there. I thought I was gonna have to assume a new name and identity and start a new life for myself in Spain.
And it was just like, I made a huge mistake.
This is Driving with Strangers. I'm Sam Harnett. In this episode, I ask my rideshare passengers about travel disasters. There's a story about a football game in India that ends with a bang. We hear how an African safari makes an unexpected stop. And then there's this group of Presbyterians who find themselves in the middle of a drug war. When you travel, things can go wrong in all kinds of ways.
The plane I was supposed to get on sucked in a bird in the engine, so I had to spend 4 hours while they cleaned it out. And then the train I got on, someone got stabbed, and I got dropped off in the middle of London at 3 a.m. and almost got mugged, and then got to the hotel where I had no Wi-Fi, and then my flight back to the U.S. got canceled.
Okay, it's not exactly a disaster, but it's a pretty unfortunate string of events. I hear lots of griping in general about plane travel. Long layovers, delays, lack of legroom. Most of this falls squarely into the first world problems category. In a way, so does the next story, although a bit more dramatically.
When I was getting on the plane, I remember thinking that I was going to sit in the emergency exit row, just in case some shit goes down, you know, I'll be like the first one off.
He was 10 years old, still young enough to have a contingency plan for an airplane crash. He and his family were on this African safari, and they were taking a small prop plane to a rural airport. As they approached the landing, they flew out of a fog bank and directly into a tree.
It was a pretty big tree, and we went through like the top of it. We flattened the top of this tree, maybe give it like a buzz cut.
They careened into the ground. The wings tore off, the doors popped open, and the engine by his exit door burst into flames.
And the plane's still moving, and I was strapped into my seat. So basically, I had this huge ball of fire next to me, and I couldn't go anywhere.
As chaotic as it was, he says he can't remember any sound. In his mind, the whole crash was silent. This next passenger loves American football. She played in high school, she watches the game, she's just crazy about it. So when she was in India, she met these professional cricket athletes, and she taught them the rules. They started playing these matches, and they got really physical. On one play, she smashed into a guy's shoulder and broke her face.
Everybody ran to the field because they thought they heard a gunshot when our bones cracked.
Oh. Yeah. You can probably remember that moment.
No, I don't remember any of it. I remember waking up in a really dirty hospital and looking at the ceiling and crying. And I think I like punched a doctor or something at some point because I was like restrained when I woke up the second time.
She had to spend 2 months in the hospital. It was dirty and disorganized, and she worried her face would never look normal again. But as it turned out, she had some luck on her side.
I had a great orthodontic surgeon, or whatever they're called, and he's actually was the best one in India because there was a conference in the city at the time, and they pulled him in because my boss had pull.
I was worried that I would be stuck in the middle of nowhere in Nicaragua with no way out, just me and this like drug war.
Okay, let's back up. She was traveling as a translator with this Presbyterian church group. Most of them were elderly women who had come to do missionary type work in Nicaragua. A storm had washed out the road and stranded them at this Nicaraguan family's farmhouse. Everything was fine until the arrival of an unexpected visitor.
But one night, their primo, their cousin, shows up, and he's got blood all over his leg. I can see the gunshot wound in his, like, his thigh.
The head of the family pulls her aside and tells her their cousin had been shot over a drug deal.
And the guy was still after him, and he wanted to get shelter at our farmhouse. I told the church group, and they were like, you know what? We need to have a group meeting. And they made this decision where they're like, okay, we're gonna leave. We gotta leave. We're putting our lives in danger. Like, our congregation would not want us to stay here.
But it's the middle of the night. The roads are a sea of mud, and they have no four-wheel drive. They're stuck. Meanwhile, down in the kitchen, the Nicaraguan family is tending to their wounded cousin. He's hurt pretty badly. But at the same time, they're worried his attackers will come looking for him.
They weren't sure what to do. They actually ended up turning him away. I'm not sure where that guy stayed the night, but didn't see him again. His pursuer never came to our place, but they had their two eldest sons stand watch overnight with shotguns.
It's easy to make a mistake without knowing it when you travel. Maybe you break a custom or do something offensive, or maybe you try to buy something you shouldn't.
So we're at this big market in Shanghai, and I am asking around to try to find bobbleheads.
Bobbleheads, those little figurines with oversized heads that wobble back and forth. The guy's friend collected them for some reason and wanted one from China. So he started asking merchants if they knew where he could find them. And they gave him this weird reaction.
Yeah, they just turned away and just walked away. And I assumed it was my bad Chinese that they were disgusted with.
Finally, he met this one guy who seemed to know what he was talking about.
I asked someone, and he was like, oh, this way. And so I followed him, and then we get towards a door, and I was like, oh, that's not a good idea. So I start to walk away, then he grabs me and throws me in.
He says it looks like some kind of interrogation cell from a movie.
no windows, one door, like one table.
Several men come in. They say they are undercover police, and they start asking him questions.
What's my real name? What drug cartel do I work for? Who am I here to assassinate?
Assassinate? He tells them he isn't a drug dealer and has no idea what they're talking about.
They took my passport and left with it, so I was like in a room by myself.
So they come back in and they know about the relatives in Malta. Malta? Yes, Malta. They scan the passport and they know he has relatives in Malta who are part of a drug cartel. He's never even heard of these people.
I went from like, this is really annoying and irritating to like, oh man, I'm actually in trouble now.
They start to question him about what he was doing at the market. What was he trying to buy? What did he want? All this is in Chinese. Bobbleheads, he says. You know, bobbleheads, the toys. They aren't buying it. He keeps saying, I was just trying to buy bobbleheads, the little toys with the heads, you know, that wobble. Eventually, one of the policemen repeats the word he thought meant bobblehead.
Gao Tao.
And he explains what it really means.
This is opium. I was like, oh, that's not good.
The whole time, he was saying opium, which is...
Gao Tao. And I believe the word for bobblehead is Gao Tao.
So that's why he had gotten all those strange reactions at the market.
Yeah, I was just basically going around asking random people, like, hey, do you know where I can find bobbleheads? But came out as, do you know where I can find opium?
He tried explaining that he had just said the wrong word. It was a mix-up. It was a mistake. They're really similar words. They still didn't believe him.
I finally convinced them to give me a piece of paper and a pencil and try to draw bobblehead, but it just looked like kind of a turtle, and so that was more confusing. It was a complete disaster.
After he had drawn a bunch of turtles for them, they started to get the picture. This wasn't an international drug dealer. He was just a confused tourist. They finally agreed to let him go. One thing didn't add up, though. Malta. So when he got home, he did some family research. And you know those drug-dealing relatives? It turns out, they really do exist. You can subscribe to the show at drivingwithstrangers.org. The song this week is Tennessee Hayride by Jason Shaw. I'm Sam Harnett. Drive safe and keep listening.
That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Just look at the homepage for the little blue letters that spell out The Spot. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. But if you're driving right now, definitely wait to do that until after you arrive safely. We like our listeners to stay in one piece around here. Tune in next Thursday, same time, for a whole new episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.